Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are getting you ready for another hour here. Should be a lot of fun. We will get a lot of football talk in here, college football, NFL football, a little bit. We'll dig in. We may have Shreya Slotta in later, KU fans, so stay tuned there. We'll find out here in just a little bit. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, WBC Delano's debut brew, Hatfield's Mama, German Kolsch with a clean, crisp character that's smooth and refreshing. Make history with Hatfield's Mama, Wichita Brewing Company, Delano's debut brew, available at all three WBC brew pubs. So we're looking forward to it. A question somebody sent us on X, Tommy: how was the attendance in Kansas City for the K-State and KU alumni teams? And the TBT didn't seem like a very good crowd, even with two facing each other. I think it was okay. I never thought it was going to be like what Wichita has been able to do with the tournament. I did think, though, it would pull some fans away, probably from Coke Arena, but I think that's all it's done. It clearly wasn't a threat to Wichita as a host throughout, kind of a thing. What were the teams? There was the Boeheim team, the Kentucky team, La Familia, and one other, I think, that were ahead of Wichita in the sales to host throughout, and they've all been eliminated. So doesn't matter. But KC was not one of those because they're not in the running anymore. Maybe they're in the running if the Aftershocks were to lose. I don't know. But, you know, not as good as Wichita, which is what we expected.
Well, and, there were some people that were worried about, the attendance at Coke Arena. I know some of the players were, some of the players made comments about it, right? But it did look like a really nice crowd last night at Coke Arena. And I think that really it just took a little bit of a challenge, to get the fan base out to support this team.
It's a great thing. It's not surprising. Wichita does this all the time. Wichita turns up for stuff like this. And they have, and they will. And I expect Sunday, man, I hope it's KU. God, that would be fun. That would be so much fun. All right, Tommy, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. It's sort of a collection from CBS Sports of where the Power Four conference commissioners sit on the college football playoff expansion. It sounds like Greg Sankey and the SEC are, he said last week, apparently, and I missed this, that they are open to a 5+7, 5+9, or 5+11 scenario. And that second number are the automatic bids after the conference champions. So basically, it sounds like, warming to the idea of the conference champions get in, the one group of six now gets in, and then all the other bids are auto bids. That's what Brett Yormark wants. It's not what the Big Ten wants. The Big Ten wants, it's, where they get the four guaranteed teams. The Big 12 and the ACC would get two guaranteed teams, and then you go from there. That's what the Big Ten wants. And then what's interesting, the ACC just wants to make sure there are conference champions in. So Jim Phillips, is also wanting the more auto bids, as is the Big 12. Here's what I thought was interesting in all of this. He believes that model, the 5+11, is the most fair. He does think this will get done in time for 2026, so he thinks they'll be at 16 teams. But here's what he said at Big 12 Media Days. We want to earn it on the field. It might not be the best solution today for the Big 12, but long term, knowing the progress we're making, the investments we're making, it's the right format for us, and I'm doubling down today on 5+11. I don't disagree with Brett Yormark on much. I disagree with him on this one. I don't think that's the best move for the Big 12. It's an aggressive stance because the bottom line is the facts do not back up that would be a good move for the Big 12. And in fact, it would be significantly better for the Big 12 to have two guaranteed bids into a 16-team playoff. They just historically wouldn't have them, especially without Oklahoma and Texas. I mean, since we've been doing this, the CFP, these the teams that currently make up the Big 12, we'd never have two teams in there. So that's a hedge. It's a hedge on the future of the league, but the future of the league to me looks like there's never going to be a dominating force and they're always going to beat up on each other.
I think that with Brett Yormark, there is, there's always been a brashness to him. He's been the top cheerleader and advocate for the conference. That's what they needed to have. They needed to have somebody come in that is wildly optimistic about the future prospects of this conference. And in today's landscape with the SEC and the Big Ten at the top, you can't have a conference leader in Brett Yormark in the Big 12 cave on anything and to act like the Big 12 is less than the other conferences. Is it realistic? I that's a different conversation than should Brett Yormark be hyper aggressive in his belief that the Big 12 is going to long term be a very strong conference. I don't have a problem at all with him saying we believe that this model in the CFP long term for our conference is the best thing for us. I don't have a problem with him saying that as long as he can deliver on that in the long term.
Do you believe that?
I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what the long-term prospects...
Do you believe there's ever a scenario in a 16-team playoff that the Big 12 could be consistently sending three teams to a playoff?
Right this second, no. But I mean,
Even down the road,
I don't know.
Optimistic way you can think about it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, in the most optimistic way I could think of, I think that there are wild scenarios all over the place in college football. I don't think it's that predictable.
For the league to, without Texas or Oklahoma, consistently do something it's never done before, even with Texas and Oklahoma, I don't know, like, in the most optimistic world, in a 16-team playoff, like, what makes us think that that these programs that are not going to have, maybe it's the salary cap, maybe he feels like that evens it out a little bit more, I suppose, because that's not something we've ever dealt with before. But in the history of college football, in modern history, the Big 12 would never be sending three teams to a playoff like this. Ever, 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 ever.
But what's the alternative?
They'd be good to send two, and you're getting an opportunity to have two guaranteed.
What's the alternative? The alternative is the old man Bob Boulsby telling legislators the Big 12 is going to fail. Like, I want my conference.
That's not true at all.
I want my conference leader to be
optimistic. Is getting two teams in and still having a way to play in. They're still going to have at-larges in that scenario, but you're getting guaranteed two teams.
I get it, and I understand that logically. The dots don't connect all the way. Even in really optimistic circumstances, I get all of that. But again, I want my conference leader to be undeniably optimistic and undeniably aggressive about the future prospects of this conference. Is it delusional? Maybe a little bit, but I also don't think anybody
just unrealistic.
I don't think that anybody expected the Big 12 to be in the position that it's in right now when Brett Yormark took over. I mean, if you had listened to what the former commissioner said, the Big 12 was on its deathbed with Texas and Oklahoma leaving right?
That was nonsense.
But Yormark has already done remarkable things in the landscape of conference realignment to not only keep the Big 12 viable, but for it to also thrive as well. And I think that he's probably thinking, look, I've already moved mountains to get this conference to where it is now. I can do more, and we can do more as a conference. I think that, the proof is in the pudding.
He's a businessman.
Let's talk about it 5 years from now.
I'll tell you why I think he's pushing for it. Because it makes the Big 12 championship game the most valuable. If you move to the new format and you do two, the Big 12 championship becomes infinitely less valuable, less important. That's where I think this lands. He's smart. He's a businessman. I think anybody that's being realistic with this understands the Big 12 getting two teams in any year is going to be a luxury. And that's just the reality of the situation. I think that in that other format that's been proposed, it really hurts your league championship game. And I think that, you know, nobody's ever going to say that, but I think that's where this comes from, because you don't want to lose that. And I understand that if that adds that much value at financially to the league, okay. Right. Like I get it. And I don't know if there's a way to, I don't know what that would look like in that other format. Whereas now it's very simple. You win the Big 12 championship game and you're in, right? It adds so much emphasis to that game. I think that's where it's got to come from. I think we're being crazy if we think the Big 12 sending three teams to a 16 team playoff. I think that's a pipe dream that's not realistic, but he's sticking to it, and I do trust him because I think he's done good work. And maybe it has something to do with the salary cap. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah,
I hope there's
been three teams
in this. That'd be awesome.
He has delivered when he's needed to in this role in the Big 12. Can he deliver this? That's going to be an ultimate test, but I trust him too.
I want to be very wrong about this, but I do think it's the wrong call. I think they should take the two. We'll come back. Let's talk Chiefs camp. We can continue that conversation with you as well. We're coming back with more Sports Daily.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster on a Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. Thanks to all those who celebrate. Hope you're having a great day. Some of us are having a great day. Some of us choose to not participate in the fun things in life. And, you know, we're all entitled to our own choices, and that's fine. I, Tommy, I love the conversation about this playoff expansion. I am glad it's coming. They're all in agreement that the seeding needs to be like a straight seeding. I don't really care about that, honestly. I think the biggest challenge is the gap of time between the playoffs starting, and I'm hoping expansion can solve that to some degree. I hope that just means we have to play games sooner than we have in the 1 year of this, but it's always been that way. I think that'll be good for the sport, but I do think this format is fascinating. And I think that, it sounds like the Big Ten now is kind of the only one pushing for this other scenario, and they're trying to maybe sway the SEC. And I get it from the SEC standpoint, because the SEC has the proof in the pudding. Like, if you go to 16, they're getting four of those teams in most years, if not more anyway. So I get where Stinky's coming from. Like, who cares? Just get us to 16 and we'll play it out. It's a really interesting discussion when it comes to the Big 12 and the ACC, though. And the ACC wants 5+11 too. It's not just Brett Yormark; they want it too.
Yeah, I think that one other thing that is really interesting that I had forgotten about, or really hadn't been thinking about in our conversation in the last segment, is I do think that there is, down the road, we're talking a few years down the road from now, But I think there's a scenario where we could see, you know, ACC members that end up being poached from different conferences. And so in the world where, you know, and I don't know which teams are most likely from the ACC to end up in the Big 12, if we're talking about a Florida State or a Miami or a Virginia or, you know, a team, you know, teams like that, North Carolina potentially, like there are options that are out there that could really change the way that we look at the 5 and 11 seeding scenario. If you've got a larger Big 12 and a larger SEC and a larger Big 10, if those teams are split up amongst multiple conferences, then that could be a little bit more of a viable situation, kind of backing up what Brett Yormark was talking about.
Yes, absolutely it would. But there are still four at-larges in the other scenario. The other part is, how long would this be the scenario? Like, how often can they just change it, right? You know, I think that in the short term, and Brett Yormark admitted that, in the short term, getting two teams in, there is no debate, would be better for the Big 12. Long term is where you've really gotta have some confidence that you're going to consistently do it. And I don't even think it's as much as being a knock on the quality of the Big 12, because I don't think it's that at all. I think it's a knock on the parity of the Big 12. The fact that this year there are five teams essentially with the same odds to win the conference championship doesn't mean those teams aren't good. It just means there are five teams there. And so, like, that's where it gets a little, because we know historically too, the Big 12 never gets the benefit of the doubt, right? As far as like the schedule and how deep the league is and those kinds of things, we've always just defaulted to the others. The Big 10 have the most recent national championships. The SEC have the long track record. The Big 12 does not have a great track record of its representative in these formats. So, I mean, I get it all, but the good news is we're having this conversation and not a stupid four-team, whatever, two-team conversation. Like, these are the right conversations. And the one thing for me that is impossible to predict, and this is where I would say I want to be wrong and trust in Brett Yormark, is what does the salary cap do to all of this? Are some of these powerhouse programs going to be able to do what they've been able to do for the last 30 years or maybe longer, which is just dominate the sport and make it feel like an inevitability, right? Sometimes, like, it's inevitable that this is going to be how this ends. I hope that the salary cap changes that, because that would be, to me, the biggest X factor in all of this. There was a major ruling yesterday, by the way, on how clearinghouses can be treated by this new collective, one that goes way over my head and is honestly too difficult for me to understand what that means. We'll ask Kevin Saul about it next week. I just don't get it. But that landscape changing as much as it is, it could change this bigger landscape when it comes to the CFP. I think that is possible.
Yeah, I mean, does it level the playing field? I would say to an extent, yes. And you know, but at the end of the day, like, I think it's still too early to tell, until the dust settles on, with all the changes and with the cap and the amount of money that can be distributed in revenue shares and things like that, how much does it actually level the playing field when it's all said and done? I think it will, but I'm not ready yet to say, like, this is the end all be all and all of a sudden all things are equal.
I'm not either. Because I don't.
Nobody knows.
That.
No, and I don't. Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, impossible to be able to tell right now as we sit here before, you know, we really actually implement revenue sharing and a limit and a cap and all of that. What I think it will make a difference, but how much of a difference will it actually make? And I don't think anybody can actually predict that.
Yeah, and then they're gonna have to rein in the transfer portal, and that will be, I don't know how you do that next either. I think there hopefully will be some natural occurrence of that, because teams won't have these big offers to offer people, and more often the best offer will be where a player currently is. I hope that solves a lot of it. I think it will some, but I don't know that it will solve all of it in the chaos that creates either. But you know, there's a lot of teams that are going to compete without the transfer portal, wouldn't have had a chance. KU is one of those teams this year. And we're going to talk. We are going to talk. I just confirmed with Shreyas Lada. We are going to have him in next segment. We can ask him that question, where what he feels like that's coming from for the Big 12 commissioner. All right, let's talk Chiefs camp a little bit here, Tommy. Not as eventful as some of the days leading up to training camp there on day one. You got some really cool emotional stuff from Trey Smith on his new contract, and you know, we're just sort of going to sort things out. Brandon Zenner reporting yesterday, it was Simmons getting the first team reps at left tackle, and Moore moved over to right tackle to fill in for Juwan Taylor. I think that is probably the most meaningful thing to watch in the preseason and the training camp here. That and what they do with Rashee Rice's reps, which they have said that he's going to just go full steam ahead. I wonder if that stays the same, though, if he gets a lengthy suspension. I think those are the two areas right now to keep an eye on in Chiefs camp, and maybe of consequence, maybe the only two.
Yeah, we always look at, especially in situations when, you know, you're going to have more than likely have a hole at the top of the wide receiver room, who the guys are further down the depth chart that are going to be battling for a roster spot. And there are familiar names that are still there. Nico Remigio is there. Tyquan Thornton is there. Your buddy Sky Moore is still on the roster, which is wild to me that somehow he continues to be on this team. But could he get a roster spot? You know, and how do the Chiefs fill out the remainder of that depth chart? With the thought in a lot of people's heads that Rashee Rice is going to miss time. I really like Nico Remigio. I like what he can do in the special teams role as well. So I think he's got value beyond just being a wide receiver. It wouldn't be shocking to me if, you know, his opportunity to make the team is greater now than it was before the Rashee Rice developments came down. I'm sure I wouldn't be shocked if he breaks camp and gets through the preseason as a part of this team. But I think the wide receiver room is going to be really interesting. You mentioned left tackle. I agree with you there. But then also running back. That was an area that was not really addressed in a large way during the offseason. They re-signed Kareem Hunt. They bring in Elijah Mitchell. Are they what other options do they have backing up Isaiah Pacheco, and who ends up showing out in training camp? That I'm interested in that too.
I'll make you a prediction. Breshad Smith's going to have a role on this team.
Yeah,
I think by the end of this thing, fantasy football players, if you're in a league with me, close your ears. If you're not, I think Breshad Smith has a decent sizable role on this team. I think there's very much a scenario where he becomes this team's Jerick McKinnon. Similar skill sets, similar type player. We know Andy Reid loves those type players, and I just don't believe in his competition for reps almost at all. Hunt will have his role because they trust him. He knows the offense, and he can protect Patrick Mahomes. Pacheco will still get the bulk of the carries. I guess Mitchell's been a non-starter for me, but who knows? I mean, who knows? If he's healthy, he is explosive. But I feel like Breshad Smith's going to be a thing. Wide receiver-wise, and maybe that's another one to watch, is just how he acclimates and what he looks like. On the wide receiver part of the conversation, I don't really care too much about the guys at the bottom of the depth chart. We always make a big deal about that every offseason, and they're never factors in the season. Like, never are they factors in the season. But I think the part of it that gets interesting is who takes the reps if Rice is gone? And I guess you could start it this way. Do you think there's any receiver on the roster that is more talented than Rashee Rice?
No.
Do you think Xavier Worthy is more talented than Rashee Rice?
No.
I don't either. And so, and I really like Worthy, and I like where he developed and what he developed into. I think they'll play different roles ultimately. I wonder if Worthy ends up filling in for Rice while Rice is gone. And then what happens if he does well when Rice comes back? Does he lose that spot? That's what I'm talking about. Like, so if Rice misses time, who does the Rice role, and do the Chiefs put somebody else there and create the role now for Rice and Worthy to both be healthy on the field at the same time? Let Worthy do his thing even when Rice is gone. Or do they say Worthy's the next best guy to play that position and slide him over and potentially move him again later? I think that's what gets really interesting with the receiver room.
They have experience in how they run their offense without Rashee Rice. They did it for majority of the season last year. And Xavier Worthy
don't have experience with him being there, basically, with Worthy developed, obviously. I know at the beginning of the year they had him, but Worthy was a rookie at that point.
Right. I think that, you know, let's say that Rice is out for 6 weeks, gets a 6-game suspension. I think you slide Worthy into that wide receiver one role. He's got experience in doing it. He did it for a lot of last season. He was growing and developing during that time. But by the end of the season, he was there. I think you continue on with that until Rashee Rice is able to come back.
But when Rashee Rice comes back.
Then you do need to scheme up. What does it look like with both of these guys on the field at the same time? That's the more intriguing conversation, whether we're talking 4 games, 6 games, you know, and beyond.
I agree. It's not what they'll do while he's gone. It's what they do when he comes back. It is what they do when he's gone in the sense of, do they put Worthy in his spot or do they put somebody else in his spot? If they put somebody else in his spot, and I would have to ask a Chiefs insider, maybe Felix Johnson will know this and we can ask him next week. Did Worthy play Rice's position last year? They move their receivers around so much until you'd pull up the all 22s. Like, I'm not sure that I don't know the answer to that question off the top of my head. Or did Worthy do his own thing? I know that, like, for Mahomes, Worthy began to fill the, you know, the role of I'm going to funnel targets to him. What I don't know is formationally, was he playing the same receiver position on the field? I don't know that without looking at it or without asking somebody who studies film. So that's the interesting part, is what they do right out of the gates. Do they just let, like, Juju Smith-Schuster fill that role until he gets back, and then Worthy does his own thing in a different spot, and then they just plug him right back in? Where's Hollywood Brown fit? I don't think Hollywood Brown would do any of the same things that Rice does. I think Juju would be more likely to do that. Or maybe it's just Worthy. And then what if Worthy balls out? Do you not put Rice back there?
What are your expectations for Jalen Royals this year? I mean, I know he's a rookie, but we've seen a history of.
I'm intrigued. Yeah. I'm intrigued, right? If Rice were to get suspended for like the second half of the year, I think Royals could become a big factor. We just don't ever see receivers come out of the gates hot for Andy Reid like that. So I don't know. I think he's a total wild card. I'm intrigued by the player. I think it's interesting that he fits a style similar to what they've been doing with Rice and Worthy. And maybe he's a unicorn for Andy Reid, and he can pick things up quickly and becomes that factor. I'll tell you that I'm in the middle of doing what are called best balls in fantasy football, where you draft a team and then you just don't mess with them, right? It automatically sets the lineup based on how many points you have. That's kind of how I practice because I'm a nerd and I love fantasy football that much. I draft Jalen Royals a lot. Just on the off chance, like with my last pick, it's either usually him or Breshard Smith. Like, I don't know that both of them are going to factor in this year, but it does feel like there's a little room for one of them to be a significant contributor to the offense. I think there's a better chance it's Smith, but with the Rice news, it could be Royals.
Who do you think?
What is the ceiling for Royals? The team's fourth best wide receiver, right? So, I mean, expectations have to be tampered a little bit.
Who do you think the most impactful rookie will be for the Chiefs this year? Is it Josh Simmons? For sure. I think one guy that is not getting a whole lot of love is Omar Norman Lott, and he's got to come in. I mean, I think he's a day one starter for this team, I think.
Because Norman Lott isn't on the roster anymore. Yeah, if Norman Lott's the correct answer to that question, it'll probably mean two things: that they've got another disaster at left tackle, and that Norman Lott's fantastic, which would be great. But if Josh Simmons isn't the most important rookie to this team, I think it's going to be a problem. I think it's going to be a pretty big problem. It was the reason they didn't win a Super Bowl last year, is because of their left tackle. Like, they have to have Josh Simmons be that guy. The planets seem to be aligning for Simmons to be the guy. He looks the part. He's got the pedigree to be the part. And the health risk that was scaring teams doesn't seem to be a factor. It seems like planetary alignment. I mean, just looking at him without pads out there, he's a monster. He looks like he belongs there. he's got to be the guy. He's got to be the guy.
It's wild how quickly he's bounced back from that injury. I mean, from talking about it, when they first drafted him, like, well, hopefully he'll be ready to go for week one. And then all of a sudden he's there in day one in training camp with no restrictions. I mean, like that, I think that's
doesn't
pretty
that tell
impressive.
You something about the athleticism? Sure. Though, to exceed that,
sure,
that
absolutely,
way?
Absolutely it does. And it's not like he is injury prone and has had a bunch of injuries in his career. He's had one. It was a pretty significant one, but he's had one. And he's been able to bounce back from that.
It's not. I mean, it's a totally different situation than Trey Smith, obviously, because you're talking about like a physical injury versus blood clots, something. But it's not all that different. Like Trey Smith was a supreme talent, and Josh Simmons appears to be a supreme talent. And there's room for the Chiefs to take those kinds of risks, and the rewards, if you get them right, can be enormous. And I hope that, but yes, if Rashard Smith scores 12 touchdowns this year, Josh Simmons will still have been more important, I think, to what the Chiefs have to get done.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And it is Shreya Slaughta on a Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday, back from vacation. I'll give you a hall pass on the Hawaiian shirt, Shreya. I know you're just trying to get back in the groove here. Yeah. So no harm, no foul there. But welcome back in. You can find Shreya's work, of course, the KC Star. You can follow Shreya, SHRE98, on X to find that work as well. We are about a day away from KU football practice opening up to the media. Shreya, are you in football mode yet? You feeling it?
I'm ready. I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be a little bit of adjustment, you know, going from summer back to football season. But the rhythm, the rhyme, everything else is starting up soon. And tomorrow is the marking of that, and back to the regularly scheduled programming, as I call it.
We talked a lot over the course of this offseason about the returners for Kansas, Shreyas, and, you know, guys like Jalen Daniels and others that are coming back for Lance Leipold. But, you know, Leipold was pretty busy in the portal during the offseason as well. I know that we haven't really seen any of these guys work yet, but are there newcomers from a transfer perspective that we should be keeping our eyes on?
Yeah, Emmanuel Henderson, Alabama transfer, Leipold, and Jalen Daniels have talked very highly about him. Wide receiver, he could be a guy that could be, you know, if everyone thinks he's as good as, you know, I've heard and players have said, he could be a real number one. And Jalen Daniels hasn't quite had that level of wide receiver ever. And no disrespect to the people that he's played with. But I think Emmanuel Henderson has a different gear. Levy Vince is another wide receiver that can come in and help try and replace the production. They brought in a tight end, two tight ends. They also have, I mean, really, Deshaun Hanukkah's back from torn Achilles tendon that kept him out last year. They've brought in a slew of corners to replace Kobe and Melo. It's going to be really interesting. There's a lot of positions that have some question marks with this team. And, you know, the biggest thing is always, is Jalen healthy, A, which it looks he appears to be, and B, can he put together a season like he did in the second half of last year after a rough start?
Shreyas, what is the biggest thing standing in the way of KU competing for a Big 12 championship this year?
Lack of cohesion, experience. I mean, a lot of these guys
have talked about. You think they're talented
enough? I think it's early to say. I think for me, sit there on the limb after last year thinking they win 11 games, I'm not going to predict them to do anywhere close to that. But I think they have this schedule, obviously, as of right now, things change rapidly, as we learned last year, to win at least 7 or 8 games. They have the quarterback to do it. They have the coaching staff to do it. I think so much of what the way KU season plays out next year is Jalen Daniels' health, his consistency. I think the wide receiver room is also another, like, you know, like could be better, could be worse. You know, you're just asking a lot of a veteran quarterback to find cohesion with a completely new look, you know, receiver room, tight end room, you know, running back room. And then on the defensive end, you're replacing a lot of talented guys. So they could certainly be a lot better than last year. I don't think, you know, that's out of the question, out of the realm of possibility. But better in the sense that they're winning, maybe losing only two games, maybe losing one game. I would have to see it to believe it.
You know, going back to the beginning of last season, we, you know, I've tried to put it out of my memory because of how maddening and frustrating it was for this Jayhawks team, especially from a play calling perspective and the way that the offense was deployed for this Jayhawks team. Jeff Grimes is out. Jim Zabrowski is the new offensive coordinator. Zabrowski has been with the team for a while and with Leipold for a long time. There is continuity there with him and Jalen Daniels. What do you expect, or what are you hearing about the way that Zabrowski has come into basically running that offense on his own now?
Well, Jalen said at Big 12 Media Days, it's like, you know, he feels like it's nothing has changed almost. He's like, maybe things I'll feel a little more when we get closer to training camp or when we're closer to the season. Right now, he's like, you know, that relationship I have with Jim Zabrowski is a good one. And he's talked about how important that relationship is. And they obviously have a lot of trust in each other. And I think there's a lot of excitement from everybody on this team who's here last year and has worked with Jim Zabrowski that, okay, there's continuity, A, but also it's not like they replaced Grimes with a guy they got off the street, you know, another guy that has to adjust to the way Kansas football plays its football. Zabrowski is a guy that, you know, I think there are players in the locker room that felt he should have been given the chance to be an offensive coordinator over Grimes last year.
That's interesting. I want to go bigger picture to the Big 12. Brett Yormark has made his stance clear when talking about a college football playoff expansion that he prefers more at-large bids and only one guaranteed bid for the Big 12. Versus the 4-4-2-2 model in which the Big 12 would get two guaranteed, but the SEC and the Big 10 would get four guaranteed teams. He says it's a bet on the future. Do you think there's a world where the Big 12, fast forward down the road, could be sending three teams in a 16-team playoff?
I think there's a world that could happen. I don't really see that as a realistic possibility of that consistent happening. I think it'd have to be a special season for those three teams to be able to be set in the playoffs. I mean, like, let's call it what it is. There's some inherent viewpoint that the Big 12 is the worst of the Power Three conferences, right, in football. Whether that's true or not depends on the season, but the Big 12 is always playing at a disadvantage because there's a viewpoint that the conference is automatically weaker than the Big 10. Automatically weaker than the SEC. So in a season where they send three, I think that means, A, these three teams had spectacular seasons just beating up on everybody else but each other in the conference. And B, there's probably a down year for the Big Ten and probably a down year for the SEC because I think there is some level of inherent media bias towards some of these other bigger conferences. I'm a Georgia fan. I understand it. I get it. There's a viewpoint that every loss in the SEC is a, you know, I joke about it, but a victory almost in the sense of to compare to other conferences. But I understand where Yormark is at because I think he knows the minute he concedes the fact that the SEC gets four bids, the Big Ten gets four bids, it just makes the mark between the Big 12, Big 10, and SEC just that much bigger and pronounced on paper.
Real quick, Shreyas, I want to go back to this Jayhawks offense. And, you know, of course, all eyes are going to be on Jalen Daniels and in, you know, his final year in college and everything. I know the health, it seems like, you know, he's back to 100% and, you know, everything we want to see from him. I think the one area of concern that I've got is what kind of protection is he going to get on the line? I have this fear that, you know, he's going to be running for his life out there. And while he's healthy now, I want to keep him healthy as well. I know that Bryce Foster is dealing with an injury that is keeping him out. What are you hearing as far as the offensive line is concerned?
Yeah, there's some question marks. I mean, there's not, you know, there's like a, you know, some guys they have to replace obviously that left or graduation. It's not what the, continuity wise it was last year or the year before that. That said, I think Kansas has done a good job of picking up some guys in the portal. You also hope you have internal development, some of the guys that have been there a long time. And, you know, I think as we've learned, there might be some growing pains. Like there were growing pains last year in the first few weeks with the offensive line. But I thought after, you know, the West Virginia game, they were pretty stellar overall. And maybe that was a mix of Jalen just looking better or the offensive line getting better, or a mix of both. But I think the offensive line has a chance because of the way they were coached and, you know, the way the pickups they picked to be as good as last year, if not better.
One final thing, Shreyas Bill-Self talked this week. Anything of interest we need to take away from that? He still wants another player, right? That's about the most meaningful thing I saw.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, you know, it's not bad to have another guy off the bench just in a developmental role. You know, I think big picture-wise, Kansas is done, and I think they know, you know, another player is not going to come in and take minutes from anybody. It's going to be a guy that can develop for maybe a couple of years, maybe an eventual bench guy, if not this year, next year. But I think, you know, I'm excited to continue to hear more progress about Bryson Tiller and El Marco Jackson in their recovery process. It seems like they're getting closer and closer to 100%. And those guys are guys who are going to be, I think, pivotal players on next year's team, because there's a lot of question marks of who's going to do what in replacing production loss, but also just finding the roles within the team.
Well, Shreyas will have his eye on all of it for us, following along stadium updates, football camp beginning, basketball roster. Where does the recruitment of Tyron Stokes stand? So go give Shreyas a follow at SHRE98. Follow his work at the KC Star. Welcome back, Shreyas, and let's get ready. We're about to be there.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Here goes Shreyas Lada. Lots of good stuff there. Go check it all out. New stadium looks good, Tommy. The images and things that we're seeing are fun. The wheat in the end zone is a nice touch. We're getting there with that stadium with Booth. It'll help big picture. I think it looks good. I know you're a KU guy that's been to a lot of games there. Are you a fan of what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks really good, really impressive, really sharp. It's not fully done. They still need to do the east side of the stadium, and that'll be the next phase of the project. And then at that point, it'll be completely done. But at least what they've done right now, you know, for this phase, it does look really good from what I've seen.
Yeah, they'll come along with that. I'm ready for football. Maybe we'll get what we thought we were going to get last year out of both KU and K-State. I think it's possible. I think it's certainly more possible for K-State than KU. But when you got these teams in the league that are so full of transfers, like it does, like what is going to happen? Who knows? You know, is Texas Tech going to get an ROI on all the money they've spent? Can KU replace all these players? It's so strange with KU to me to be so down on all these players that they lost, which I am, but they didn't win very many games last year. You know, it's like this weird dynamic, like, oh my gosh, they got to replace all these guys. What, they didn't do what they were supposed to do last year. So maybe that's not such a bad thing. I don't know.
By the way, this is on a completely different note. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but some news coming down this morning that apparently ESPN and the NFL are closing in on a deal that would see ESPN acquire the NFL Network and the Red Zone Channel. And so apparently that's there. The words are there within the 5-yard line of ESPN acquiring both of those properties.
That makes a lot of sense based on some other things that are happening around the sports world. I don't know if, I mean, I don't watch a ton of NFL Network outside of the Red Zone. So you better just keep my guy, Scott Hansen.
I know.
Better not mess with that.
Watch it end up being, you know, 8 hours of Stephen A. Smith doing Red Zone every Sunday.
No comment. And I like Stephen A. Smith. I don't think I'd like him in that role at all. But nobody touched that except Scott Hansen. He's the guy. Leave him alone. That's it for us. Big thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up late last night. Needed a little extra today. We appreciate them always bringing it for us. And don't forget Royals baseball in Chicago, day baseball at Wrigley. You can listen to the game. Coverage begins at 1 o'clock right here on 97.5 and 1240 KFH. You can also always catch it KFHradio.com or free on the Odyssey app. Just search KFH. Tommy, it's starting to feel like football season. I mean, it is. It is a great deal.
Yeah, we're getting there. I need it to not be 105 degrees outside for it to feel more like football, but we're getting there. We're getting closer.
All right. We'll see everybody tomorrow.